This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanison. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 18th of June, or like one of our producers likes to say, it's Friday Junior. We're that bit closer to the weekend.
So what is Monday then?
Sunday Senior?
Yeah. Yes.
Sunday Senior. Yeah, I like that. I think we should add on top of that. So you've got Friday Junior, you've got Sunday Senior. And if you've got any other suggestions for the rest of the week, you should let us know over on Twitter. I think we should definitely make a game out of this.
Absolutely. So how are you both doing this lovely Friday Junior morning?
As usual, looking forward to the weekend. I've got my normal, very exciting plans of running and baking. Ha ha. I am seriously a creature of like predictability.
Xiaoning, that's a TV show waiting to happen. Running and baking, you know, just a mobile kitchen next to you as you run on the road and you bake alongside. I don't know how feasible this is at all.
No,
we
not
know that
feasible.
I am no good in the kitchen, so I have no context for any of this whatsoever. I've been good. I'm good. Looking forward to the weekend, but I don't want to also echo that statement in terms of, you know, like everyone seems to be looking forward to the weekend. But I'm okay. Not bad. I've got coffee in me, so that's a good thing.
Oh, coffee does sound good. Maybe I'll get a cup of coffee sometime during one of the news breaks. But right now, we do have a lot of things lined up for you, particularly in this next hour. So later on, after the 6:30 news and after I go get my coffee, what do we have to discuss?
Well, as usual, we'll be going to look at some international events, okay? And how sometimes you have to call in the military.
Wow.
Is that dramatic enough?
That sounded really ominous.
Yeah. But in a good way. Not in a bad way, but not in a good way either.
Okay, so for those of you who aren't in studio, okay, I was a little bit startled because Xiaoning accompanied that statement of call in the military with, you know, turning around to look at me almost with finger guns. So I was a little bit like, I felt like sticking my hands up in the air to say, okay, you know, it's all right. I'm not the enemy here.
Oh, I'm always watching you.
I can't see it, right? So all I heard was, it's not good, but it's not bad. So like, okay, I understand. I think I get what this is about. I'll be in about 10 minutes speaking about always watching us shouting. I'll be talking about, I've got the wrong story in my head. We're going to be talking about how events could change. I think yesterday we were talking about how movies were coming back. Cinemas have their SOPs. But what about live events? This is something that's going to be even more difficult because, you know, if you're like me, you want to go to a concert, you want to be in that vibe. How are you going to maintain that vibe with 2 meters of social distancing? Well, we'll be discussing that in 10 minutes.
If you want to weigh in, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we are going to be talking about whether or not employers should be allowed to monitor employees who are working from home. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Torn by Natalie Imbruglia, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, when it comes to the subject of working from home, I think we're starting to see a lot more companies and employers start to tackle the idea of how do we kind of keep tabs on our employees who are working from home. And I'm looking at you this morning, Roshan, because you are broadcasting to us from your home studio today. We can see you up on our little video screen. And the question...
Yeah, it always feels like someone's watching me.
Yes, someone is.
Someone
hashtag. Yes, and now with the technology out on the market, someone really could be watching your computers, your mobile phones, watching your social media usage. These are all things that are starting to crop up more and more as companies try to adjust to this new normal, right? So the question is, really, should employers be allowed to... essentially monitor your employees' technology use, their productivity while they're actually working from home?
But it's nothing new, right? Because, I mean, even when pre-COVID days, companies were already doing that one way, and we don't realize it sometimes. It doesn't even occur to us. For example, swiping in and out of an office, that's one way of tracking where you're going. Companies monitor your emails. Some do, some don't, of course, but it's becoming increasingly common. So it's nothing new, but I guess maybe companies felt, when they're in the office, I got better control. I can see where they are. I have my eyes on them. But when everybody's at home, they are like, I wonder what so-and-so is up to, you know. So apparently they've got all this new software, right, which they embed in your PC so they know how long you've been working.
Yeah, I think it really depends on, I've got like two major opinions here, or two, not major, not super major big opinions, but two opinions here. One is, I guess it depends on whether the company wants to see more output or more effort, right? Because this is the general work from home. You know, we've seen whether it's 4-day working weeks or 6-day hours or 6-hour days. You know, these are all things, the perpetual argument between getting output done based on your KPI versus just being seen doing work. That's one thing. The other thing, I think it really depends on whether it's the company's property. If it's my handphone, which I purchased, or my computer, I don't think the company has any right to install anything on it. The emails belong to the company, right? If you, most of the time, unless your company's using your personal email for some reason, but most of the time, all these emails, they license it through Gmail. So it belongs to the company. But I mean, my friends who work in the corporate line, their computers are provided to them by the company. So the company has ultimate control over that PC. They have all sorts of administrative controls as is. I really do think it comes to that. And as we move towards a new work arrangement, the rules of engagement do change. And this is something that employers and employees need to talk about, because you can't be applying. We have to acknowledge that things are changing, and how do you adjust this? Because employers are always going to want to know whether employees are working, and employees are going to want to maintain some level of privacy in their home. So how do you bridge that gap? And on top of that, you trust only works for smaller companies. I think the bigger your company becomes, it's very hard to use trust as the metric for keeping or for employees working from home.
But see, the thing is, right, it is also a large measure of trust. Yes, I can understand that, particularly in larger organizations, you know, there is a certain amount of, you can't be keeping tabs on everyone all the time. But at the same time, you know, there has been research and surveys to show that employees work better when there is an element of trust to the equation, when a little bit of agency is given to them in their working life. So if companies were to adopt this method of basically installing apps on your phone, installing apps on your computer to basically monitor everything and ensure you're online for every minute of your 8-hour workday, even if you're working from home, then I think that element of trust is basically no longer there. What it says to me is that the company doesn't trust my ability to work on my own, to take my working life into my own hands. So, you know, what kind of return am I expected to give them if they don't give me that trust in the first place?
Well, I mean, sounds stupid, but there's two ways about this, right? Either you have a paranoid company, which of course there are some, or truly you have lazy staff. Sometimes people are lazy, and you feel compelled to do this because you think that they have no output. So, I mean, what is the middle ground? I guess if you don't want to install any privacy apps, one way is to give staff key deliverables by a certain date. Mm-hmm. Be very, very specific about what you want and when you want it by, so that you don't have to micromanage anyone. You just say, go and do XYZ, give it to me by, you know, this date, this time, and you leave it to the person to sort it out, right? So, and you shouldn't have to monitor every minute of the day when they do it and how they do it. As long as they've delivered it and the work quality is up to scratch, then let it be, because I think it's going to be very difficult for us to keep our eyes on everybody all the time. I mean, it's just, honestly, I don't think it's going to work out in the long term.
You know, my initial reaction was that this would benefit employers, but I'm thinking about it. It might benefit employees, because if the hours are more than what is expected of them, they'll actually have empirical data to show that, hey, not only am I staying in the office, I'm actually working these 57 hours a week. So
only for the hardworking ones.
Right? But the argument has always been, oh, you just work in the office, not doing anything. But now if you've got a combination of work data, like, oh, this is the emails time on the document time on this time on that, it may benefit the employees, but we don't know for the hardworking ones, maybe.
Well, let us know what you think about this. Should employers be allowed to monitor employees who are working from home? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us from at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're taking a look at live events in this new normal. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. VFM 89.9, that was The Kooks with So Good Looking, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shaoning and Roshan. Now, this morning we're taking a look at the subject of live events, because there's an article on the BBC looking at five ways that gigs may change in the future. Obviously, I think for Malaysia, this is a little bit of a ways off, since Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob came out yesterday to say that cinemas actually aren't allowed during this RMCO period. So no movies for the foreseeable future. So it seems like live events are going to be even further off, right? But this is an interesting article, because it talks about some design ideas that are currently being worked out in the labs. Apparently, there's a company in California that is creating a protection suit that would allow people...
like a spaceman kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of. A little bit like, you know, something very Daft Punk-esque. So okay. Somewhere between a spacesuit and a scuba suit.
I want to look like Daft Punk. Can I get a suit like that just for fun?
I mean, probably you may have to pay for it, but it's the idea apparently is that these are going to be rented out by venues, and you can go in, pay to put on this suit and go and enjoy yourself in the party, and then at the end of the day, the venue is responsible for cleaning it. So it's gonna have apparently has a helmet, a filtration system, LED lighting.
Wow, you must be really desperate to party to put all that on. Okay, but never mind. Yes, that's one option.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's another one that apparently is already happening in Denmark. So drive-in concerts where people, you know, like the drive-in cinemas?
Yeah, they were very popular in the 1950s and 1960s, and then they kind of died, right? Because everything came to the Cineplex. And even in Korea it has started, you know, so it's a possible trend. My only issue about that is that in Malaysia, we would need to leave the aircon on because it's so hot in our cars. We can't just like roll down the windows, right? It's very warm. And I don't want to contribute to carbon emissions by keeping my engine going. So I like the idea, but how do we execute it? Because it doesn't really necessarily work everywhere else, right?
On top of that, don't forget Corona. Don't forget the exhaust around us. If you're going to be in there, everyone's engines on. It's going to be an unpleasant environment if everyone around you has their car engines on and just exhaust all over the place. Maybe not the most ideal for our climate, but it is interesting. Things like, I think one of the other things they point out is it may work for big venues, right? So the big gigs. Let's say Metallica comes to town, they can afford to take the biggest stadium and do social distancing there if they wanted to, right? Where you basically, I think, maybe one in three seats. This is one of the yeah. arguments that's made here.
Because people will also be more. Yes, exactly. Fans, you know, because you have a lot more, like these big bands, so Metallica, for example, have a lot more fans who are probably willing to fork out the money, right, as compared to smaller groups.
So this goes back to the discussion, right? Like you say, you already expect ticket prices to be expensive. So we've talked about this yesterday, where if hypothetically cinemas were to reopen and there was physical distancing and then airlines the same, what are prices of all these tickets going to look like in the future? Because let's face it, even when you go and watch somebody like Bon Jovi, the tickets are never cheap. Coldplay, never cheap, right? You know, like, especially if you... Because they are actually based on US dollar terms. There isn't much difference. So easily a ticket is like $100, which is about 450 ringgit. And this is pre-COVID, where you could fit like 2,000-3,000 people into a venue. So let's say you cut one third. What does that mean? Is it something that people are willing to pay for? Or maybe artists are prepared to earn less money?
I think it really depends on how big the name is. I think smaller artists are going to feel the pinch from this. It's going to be a difficult road for them. I mean, it really depends. Like, I mean, if Taylor Swift came to town, I bet you people are going to go for that concert. Because even during the normal times, people were, what's the word here? You know, they would buy the tickets at the early
scalpers.
Stage.
Scalpers.
Yes, scalpers. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And tickets would go into the thousands just to get that. I mean, when I went for Metallica a few years ago, when it was in Stadium Merdeka, that was already maybe 500 ringgit a ticket. And it was sold out within the day. It's demand supply. If Metallica or one of these big artists comes to town, if they charge more, I think people would still go.
But then leads back to the question, right? How badly do you want to go to a concert that you're prepared to kind of consider the potential health risks. I mean, which exists nonetheless, right? Even if you had a mask. Because the other thing that COVID-19, apparently one of the reasons why it spreads in some like events is when you sing, for example, because you're spreading that droplets, right? So imagine you go to the concert and you can't scream anymore, you know? You can't go like, ah, you know, you can't. All that is like, you just keep quiet, don't move, you know, don't spray your droplets.
I mean, the question is also whether or not we will get any of these big ticket names coming to Malaysia, right? Because prior to this, let's be honest, Malaysia was not one of the favorite destinations for world tours. And if you speak to events people in this industry, it can... Sometimes the regulations made it difficult to bring in international artists already. So what more so with a global pandemic on the cards, right? You know, and what kind of other regulations are going to be put in place, and whether or not it's feasible for events companies to implement them. I think all of these still are a little bit up in the air. So do let us know what you think. What kind of changes would give you the confidence to attend live events? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you, but first the Chemical Brothers with Let Forever Be, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanison. Now, it is 6:40 a.m., Thursday the 18th of June, and earlier that song was Are You In by Incubus. Now, we've had a couple of social media responses so far to what we've been talking about. Ro has weighed in on the subject of whether or not employers should be allowed to monitor their employees while who are working from home. And he says, a person physically in the office for 8 hours isn't necessarily working, so the same applies to a person online for the same time. Monitor targets and leave the spying to Daniel Craig. I think since Rose is such a regular listener, he's really clocked onto the fact that you are a huge James Bond fan.
Because I want to be James Bond.
So I feel like that should be dedicated to you, really.
No, but Rose is correct. I mean, you can't keep watch on everybody 24/7. And if you had to, I mean, really, maybe that's the wrong employee and you're a crazy boss, one or the other. But you should just give them targets and just tell them, you know, go forth and come back with the result. And if you don't, then you can really, you know, you can kill them later. But jokes aside, yeah, because you don't have time to monitor everyone 24/7.
So, but speaking of people who perhaps shouldn't, though, have gone forth, New Zealand is having a little bit of an issue in regards to the COVID-19 infections there. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has had to call in the military to enforce border controls after two sisters, so New Zealand citizens who returned from the UK to visit a dying parent, were allowed to leave quarantine early without being tested. The pair then met up with friends when they shouldn't have done it and subsequently tested positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, this is the part which interests me where, okay, you know, the state is trying to be a little bit empathic and say, okay, fine, you know, because you have a dying parent, we will make some exemptions. But I think then also goes back to you having to fulfill your end of the bargain, which is not to go and meet your friends. So it's a little bit of both, right? So now as even Malaysia, as we go into this RMCO and we have so-called SOPs, for example, but we still need to do our part. So I think that's important. And New Zealand is an example of this, that, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, citizens don't always do what they need to.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Ardern has appointed the Assistant Chief of Defence Air Commodore Digby Webb to oversee all quarantine and manage isolation facilities, including the process of people exiting them. So far, 320 close contacts have been identified based on the women, but it is includes people who are on the flights and things like that. But also, they took an 8-hour drive, which is going to be a fun time to audit if they stop by and if there was any contacts on the way. But this would be the first two cases in more than 3 weeks and brought an end to the country's brief but virus-free period. And so we'll see how they take it from here. But I mean, Jacinda Ardern is being very open about this and addressing the issue, right? Okay, what happened here? How do we adjust it? How do we move forward from here? Which is what you want to see from a leader, especially in a situation like this.
Yeah, I think this is the future. So yes, like even China, right? Like Beijing, what, 54 days without a case of COVID-19, and suddenly you've got a cluster emerging out of nowhere with 100 infections. So even in Malaysia's case, right, now we've got our virus cases down to, you know, daily. It's very, very good numbers. Like yesterday was, what, 10? Some days it's 30, some days it's 40. But the level of vigilance that everyone needs to have remains there, because you never really know. And let's face it, right, until a vaccine is found, it's really a war. It's not a battle, it's a war.
Yeah, and I think we just have to be wary of the fatigue that could set in, because you don't want to let yourself get tired of all of the extra measures that we have to put in place, because unfortunately they're necessary. And the consequences of not doing it are potentially far more dire than the temporary discomfort of continuing to wear masks and physical distance, right?
Yeah.
So if we take a look, though, at other stories this morning, Facebook has made the decision to allow users to turn off political adverts on the social network in the run-up to the 2020 US election. So the feature is set to start rolling out on Facebook and Instagram later today, and it'll allow users to turn off political, electoral, and social issue adverts from candidates and other organizations that have the paid-for political disclaimer. So this is, I think this is something that NGOs and many sectors have been after Facebook to do for a while, because it can be I think hard in a lot of cases to distinguish what is an advertisement for a candidate in the US, because sometimes what they mentioned here, kind of the social issue adverts, are kind of nicely disguised, and they're not necessarily paid for by the candidates' campaigns themselves, but by other organizations that happen to be in support. So it can be quite a quagmire of funding lines to be able to dissect when you're just seeing the advert appear on your social media.
It's true, because when you see it for the first time, there's that tiny, tiny word which you won't notice, sponsored. Right, it's like barely there, and like you say, Lynn, it's so clever. The ads are so clever. You don't even realize it. You almost think it's a news event, a news item, and you kind of think, oh, if I click on it or whatever, this must be fact, right? And you don't realize that it's actually a form of lobbying or whatever you want to call it, right? But I wonder how many of us will actually switch it off, if let's say in Malaysia's case. Because they're supposed to roll this out, you know, in autumn. And I wonder if, let's say we go to GE15, whether political parties will start doing it on Facebook, which is something I think it's not inconceivable. And will this be implemented? Will we switch off this?
So this is very specifically about paid-for political disclaimers, mm-hmm. right? Which is a very big thing in the US. I mean, you always see these in the US, the TV ads. This was brought to you, this message was brought to you by the Biden campaign or something along those lines. And they've also taken this to the social media platforms. I wonder if that parallel exists in our country as well, or whether you have supporters just putting up information online, because that's a different way of getting a message across, right? If people are sharing certain news articles, that's not exactly paid for or sponsored, then that's a whole different beast whatsoever, because the fake news is not so much a problem when we of sponsorship. It's a problem of people viraling information like that without verifying. So that's going to be another big issue going forward in terms of political messaging.
Absolutely, because social media and misinformation and disinformation can be quite almost inextricably linked at this point. And it's going to be quite the mammoth task for these big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter to really address them, even if there is the will to do so. So let us know what you think about the stories that we've covered so far. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some messages coming up for you, and then we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our news outlets this morning, so stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Aretha Franklin and Eurythmics with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shouning and Roshan. Now, we're looking at our news outlets this morning on the front pages of the papers as well as the lead stories online. I have the NST in front of me, and their headline here is Private Higher Education at a crossroads, because if you flip open to page 2 and 3, where the story is continued, the headlines here are Learning Institute institutions foundering, revenues decimated due to falling enrollment, movement restrictions. And this is something that we've addressed several times as well on the Breakfast Grill. So you can search the subject of higher education and on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. Because private higher education is really dependent, particularly on international student fees, right? So that makes up a good portion of their revenue. And with borders shut, international students can't come in. A lot of them have had to start their learning experiences online. And even beyond this immediate school year, hesitation over whether or not you actually want to physically leave the country is an issue. People may not have the parents and students may not have the funds to be able to fund a higher education overseas. So that could also be an issue. So it is very much, as they say, at a crossroads.
Yeah, and actually we underestimate the value of education in the economy. So, like in US, it's a $55 billion industry. Mm-hmm. In UK, it's an £8 billion industry. And this is even excluding all the money that students spend, right? So, you know, in terms of like living expenses, travel, things like that, there's a huge multiplier effect that education has. So I think this is a conversation I think we will continue to have on this show.
Yeah, the other interesting thing is that local private higher education institutes, right? As universities around the world start to go online, you have the Harvards and Yales and the Ivy Leagues of the world now having online courses. So, you know, people may choose to go for that. Or what if these Ivy League universities start to lower their fees because they're desperate for students? So they may choose that education versus a local private higher education.
Well, the US Ivy Leagues, you know, most of them are super rich because they have huge endowment funds. So lucky for them. But I think it's the middle kind of universities that have a bit of a struggle. But for me, Malaysian Reserve, my headline is Financial Issues, SOP Confusion, Drag, Construction Restart. So we've been talking about this. I think, you know, different sectors have different issues over their SOPs. But so far, I would have to say sometimes the government's quite responsive, very fast. Mm. I think yesterday there was a complaint about restaurants, SOPs, tables. And immediately our defence minister said, okay, it's no longer four to a table. It depends on the size of the table.
And Roshan, what do you have in front of you this morning?
I have got the Malaysia Kini portal open in front of me. And in particular, I'm paying attention to this story around new norms and elections. So the title of this is New Norms Affect Everything, Even the Democratic Process. This is the EC chair, Azhar Harun, talking about how the Kini by-election is going to be different in that there are going to be no physical dramas or house-to-house visits for campaigning. And this is a stark difference from the previous elections, and some are concerned around this because that it concerned that this impedes the democratic process because Chini is a rural seat, so maybe their access to internet and online dramas may not be as connected. So that is something that's going to be of a concern, or that is some people are bringing up. But Azhar Harun does say that this is for safety, right? End of the day, this is a real reality that we need to deal with. And all political parties need to figure out how to effectively campaign online. And I think they are learning. Let's see how dramas online work out in the long term.
All right, and I also have the Star in front of me. And while, you know, the main headline here in bright red says they just don't learn because Malaysians are adopting a lax attitude in response to the Recovery Movement Control Order, not very surprising, my attention was also caught by the picture they have on the front page because it is of a Chinese wedding tea ceremony that's being held over Zoom link. So it's still a wedding ceremony, just performed virtually. Apparently, this young couple who got married had about 100 people attending their reception via Zoom teleconferencing.
And it's a topic we are going to talk about this morning, right?
So because that's going to be happening later on at about 7:15. So be sure to stay tuned. But right now we are heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin and then the serious end of the morning run. But first, The Impression That I Get by the Mighty Boss Tones, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.